Blog Talk Radio.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
And welcome to Garage Talk Live. I'm Vince Montague, your host. It is Tuesday, July the 3rd. Tomorrow is the birthday of our nation. So hope everybody has a good time and remember what it's all about. Well, anyway, let's get right to it. Joining me on the show for his debut appearance, former NASCAR Cup Series driver, the one and only Jeremy Mayfield. Jeremy, welcome to Garage Talk Live.
Hey, man. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. Yeah. So it was hard to get you when you were a cup driver because you had all that other stuff to do, and you know how that goes.
Huh. And now we got plenty of time, so, yeah, anytime.
That's cool. So, anyway, 4th of July, racing back in the day, bring back memories, going to Daytona and all that kind of stuff for the Pepsi 400, and now I think it's Coke Zero 400.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I definitely always remember the 4th of July. It's always hot and humid and everything else down there to race, but always a lot of fun, you know, and just it's always exciting. You know, the fans were always pumped up and everybody was, excited about the race and really still look forward to it and still think about it, you know, for sure. Never forget the memories there at Daytona and it's just something that I probably never will forget.
Yeah, it's hard to believe how many years it's been but now you're back on the track with Safety Plus Racing. How did that deal all come about?
Well, I've been wanting to run dirt for a long time. Even when I was running the Cup Series, I wanted to, someday, when I retired or whatever, to start running dirt and just having fun again and kind of going back to all the short tracks and just enjoying racing. And a good friend of mine, actually two good friends of mine, Wendell Norton, who owns Safety Plus, came on board with us this year to sponsor the car that Taylor Griffin actually owns, which was Griffco Racing. And they kind of partnered up and we put a deal together and here we are racing. And we run the Crate Series, Thunder Series, actually, Crate late model stuff on dirt. And just had a lot of fun this year doing it. And, like I said, just kind of get this chance to go back and to the Saturday night short track style racing. And we just had a blast doing it all year long. And we're getting closer every week to winning. And I'm sure since we win one, we'll even love it more. So, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of hard when you get back in the car and you got to get everything all dialed in to how you like it and, kind of like racing on any track, really, but to get back to your roots, that Saturday night racing, seems like it puts the fun back into it as opposed to the corporate stuff you had to go through, even though it was, part of your job and that's where you wanted to be. But it seems like even Kenny Wallace and Tony Stewart, they still hit the dirt tracks now that they're not driving the big series anymore.
Right, and NASCAR just got so, I don't know how you say it as a driver. A lot of people look at it and say, man, you ought to, really appreciate it and have fun because you drive for a living or whatever, and that's all you have to do. And it was fun, had tons of memories, like I said, and just wouldn't trade it for the world. But there was a lot of pressure that went along with that, and you know, that you see a lot of these guys now retiring early, and Tony and Kenny, like you said, and Jeff and all them guys, they're not retiring to be retiring, because I know they love what they did, but it just a lot of pressure goes along with that, and now you can just kind of get back, take a couple steps back, and do the things that you didn't get a chance to do while you were racing, because it is, you know, it took up 100% of your time just, you know, focused on what you had to do there, and you really didn't have a life outside of that. So now I think it gives you other opportunities to go pursue or whatever, and kind of, like I said, take a step back and realize what all you did do and got a chance to do, and appreciate it, and just move forward, move on.
I know this way, you know, you get to spend a lot more home time. Now, do you travel to different tracks with the team, or you stick to the one track near where you guys race?
No, we were in a lot of in the Georgia, South Carolina area, and I think we had the big race at the end of the year, being Charlotte, and you know, so it's just a lot of local tracks around this area, probably within a 3 or 4 hour radius from where we're at, and you know, like we're running tonight at Tocoa Speedway, and we're running like Livonia, Georgia, and just, you know, a lot of the tracks in that area, and which is the racing's really strong down here. I mean, it's everywhere we go, there's always a lot of car count, you know, a lot of race cars there, and usually the stands are packed and full, and everybody's excited, and it's just amazing how you see some of these racetracks that, you know, off the beaten path here a little bit, and you think, man, you don't even know there's a racetrack even out there, and all of a sudden the racetrack will be there, and it'll be packed that night with fans and racers and everybody else, and that just shows how strong it really is.
I know the dirt cars have a big following, because that's where all the young talent comes from. What's it like running against those up-and-comers or some of the guys that have been in, you know, that just stick to the dirt tracks their whole lives? It seems like there's a lot more determination there.
Right. No, there is. And a lot of those guys are trying to make it to where, you know, the big time, whether it's Lucas Oil Series and the dirt series, or they're trying to make it in cup racing. And, you know, that's where it all starts at, you know, is Saturday night racing and then short tracks, and you see how hungry they are, and there's a lot of good racers out there. I mean, they're everywhere, and, you know, some of them are fortunate enough to move on, and some of them are not, and that doesn't mean they don't have the talent to do it, just they weren't in the right place at the right time, I guess, you know, and, you know, it's just a tough sport, you know, no matter what it is. It's that when you get to the highest level of racing, no matter where it's at or what you're doing, I don't care if it's go-karts or dirt cars or cup cars, you know, it's all competitive, and you better be the best you can be and to get there. And like I said, there's very few and far between that do make it, you know, because of different circumstances. And but there's only a few, select few that get to do it. And you know, that's what everybody's shooting for.
That's pretty much the way it seems to be, the progression of things. But I think the big time anymore, anybody that needs to get a ride has to bring along a big name sponsor with them, as opposed to years ago when you first came up, the owner went out and hunted down your sponsors. Now it seems like the drivers have to do that, and it kind of turned the tables on things.
Yeah, you know, I think sponsorship's kind of gotten tougher and tougher every year, it seems like, and, you know, there's been so many companies that's been involved in different sports and in and out, you know, you really have to you got to work at it to make it work for them. And, you know, if you just think that you put your name on the side of a car and think that that's going to, you know, all of a sudden boost your sales up, but you got to really work it. You know, you got to have hospitality, and you got to really go at whatever angle that they need to go in as far as marketing-wise to you know, get the most bang for their buck. And if they don't get that, then they're not in it very long. So, you know, whoever can do that the best usually keeps the sponsors and knows how to get them. And, you know, it's all a lot of politics involved too, you know, as far as that goes. I mean, you can have a trucking company somewhere that spends a lot of money with an oil company or whatever, and you know, they kind of leverage that, and the oil company gets on the race car. So there's a lot of different ways you can go about doing it, and people have pretty much explored all those ways, and a lot of people do good jobs at it, you know, and able to keep them.
And the thing about driving on dirt, you still need sponsors there too, but like, I don't even know what it would cost to, I guess, field a race car for a whole season on dirt, because there's a lot of chances that you're not going to bring it back in one piece after the weekend.
Right. You know, and then, you know, when you look at dirt racing and dirt late model racing especially, there's so many tracks across the United States that you can go to and race, and there's two big series. You know, you got the Lucas Oil Series, and you got the the World of Outlaws, and you can just run a lot of races every year. I mean, you can probably run up to a couple hundred or more races every year if you wanted to, if you're able to do that, you know. A lot of guys run 60 or 70, 80 races and 3 or 4 nights a week every year round. So that's the good thing about it. You can race a lot, all you want to race, but it does cost money to do that, run up and down the road and keep tires on them and motors and parts and pieces and pit crews and everything else. So, you know, it takes a lot of money to run, but, you know, it's certainly obviously, you know, pretty strong. And the budgets have gotten, you know, out of hand, it seemed like in NASCAR, but in dirt late models, you pretty much money. It takes a lot of money to run, but money does not rule the sport. Doesn't seem like, you know, you can still have a small time team and go win races somewhere, and you're not going to just get out dollared. I mean, you will if you don't have nothing, but it doesn't take, you know, $10 million to do it either. So, which is a great thing.
That's a lot of big issue there, because I think back in the day, a cup team, so when it came up in the 80s, it was like only a couple $1 million, and now you're looking at $10, $15 million to even be competitive. So, yeah, it's even the drag racing, NHRA Pro Stock, I think they fund a full Pro Stock team at about $2.5 million a year, which seems pretty low in comparison to some of the Nitro cars. But as far as running on in the dirt series or late models, what's it normally take to run a whole season? Like, if somebody wanted to come on board and say, hey, I'd like to put my Garage Talk Live logo on your car, what would it take to maybe not fund the whole car, but, like, get a spot on the hood,
right,
or the side of the car or whatever?
Well, that's the good thing about dirt racing, too. You see a lot of the guys that don't have just one primary sponsor, they'll have, 15 or 20, like you said, associate sponsors that are on the car. And those range from anywhere between, you know, just depending on what and how long and how many races you want to go with us or whatever. But just say, for example, to run, like, say, the Lucas Oil Series or World of Outlaws, you know, you can spend $300,000, you can spend $500,000 or $750,000 or even $1 million if you want to, you know, depending on how big you want to go with it. So, but just to run one single car and one of those series, you could do it on, you know, like I said, it just depends on where you want to, how lavishing you want your trips to be on the road. You know, do you want to stay in a hotel or do you want to get a total home and ride around it and stay in it? So, but you can spend anywhere from $300,000 to $500,000 total doing that, you know, easy. But on the local level, it's, you know, a $500 sponsor for the year or whatever, you know, get you associate or $200 a race. It all depends. It all depends on, you know, where you're going and what you want to achieve as a race team and as sponsors in general, you know.
Yeah, because I was kind of wondering, because, you know, everybody that goes out on the weekend always has, like, somebody locally or a couple of local businesses that chip in, whether if it's hardware or cash or whatever.
Right.
Like, I see you, like, you have, looking at your team's Facebook page, they have a list of, I guess, the bigger guys on there, like Griffin Brothers and Alpha Art Company, or, like, I guess, being you have Griffin Brothers on the back quarter panel of the car, I guess they're the big guys right now. Because it's usually
right,
location,
well,
and it depends on what you pay.
Right. And we got Safety Plus, who's came on after the season has started, and they're huge. You know, they're on the whole side of the trailer and on the car. And you know, like I said, we're gaining on it, you know, and as we build this relationship with everybody and we keep moving on, I'm sure we're going to be moving up and next year maybe racing a little bit bigger, and next year that following after that, just keep, you know, growing, and hopefully one day we'll have our race team where it needs to be. And as far as, you know, hopefully headed towards the, I guess you'd say, the big time racers, which would be the Lucas Oil Series or something like that, you know. Be pretty cool.
Yeah. I know around here they have Wythe County Speedway, where a lot of the guys come to test truck series and all, because they started running on dirt. So if there's any chance you coming up this way, let me know. I'll get
okay
out there to see
yeah
you.
I'm sure we will. Yeah, well, I'm sure we will someday. And I can't wait till we start doing that. And like I said, travel around again and run some big races. It'll be a lot of fun.
Sounds good. Well, I better let you attend the other things. Go ahead.
Well, if anybody wants a T-shirt or any of our souvenir stuff, you can go to racefanshop.com and got all our stuff on there. And Taylor's done a great job with that. And I'm more than happy to push out with a T-shirt.
Sounds good. And if you want to check out Safety Plus Racing page to get a hold of to see where Jeremy's going to be. They're always pretty good. They got back to me pretty quick. So whoever handles your social media is doing a fine job.
Well, thank you very much. They do a great job, and we appreciate it. And just want to say thanks to all the fans out there that's still with us, and hopefully you'll be seeing more of us pretty soon here.
That's great to hear. All right, Jeremy, thanks for joining me, and have a good weekend. Enjoy the 4th if you're not running. And if you are running, have a good luck on the track. So
sounds good, buddy. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hope to have you back soon.
Thank you. Anytime. Appreciate it.
All right. Okay, bye now. There we have Jeremy Mayfield, former NASCAR Monster Energy Series Sprint Winston Cup Series driver. I think he came up in the Winston Cup Series way back in the day. Back on track in the dirt for Safety Plus Racing, who is their big team there. Go to their social, go to their Facebook page, hit a like. I saw where they have us posted for the show today, so hopefully everybody, all Jeremy Mayfield fans, can check him out and hey, send him a thing. Maybe he can come to a race near you. I'm trying to get him up here to Wythe County, so that's where we'll be right now. Anyway, he was always a good person to talk to back in the day. Never had a problem talking to him. He might have remembered me. He might not, but, you know, all the stuff he's been through. It's great to see him back driving again. So, great to have him on the show. I like to get all the guys on the show that I used to watch and cover back in the day. So check out some of these T-shirts. I'm looking at them. It's pretty neat. Number 49 car. It's always great having them on. Well, like I said before, everything back in action NASCAR this weekend at Daytona for the Coke Zero 400. NHRA back in action. For the NHRA New England Nationals. So, got a lot of stuff going on this weekend. New England Nationals up in Epping, New Hampshire. Sure, Courtney Force would like to get back on the winning track. After winning a couple in a row and then going to the finals and getting beat by Matt Hagan the last time, but she's still carrying that points lead. As a matter of fact, let's check on the standings real quick, see who's up there. Steve Torrance has a 117-point lead over Clay Milliken, who really came into his own this year. I mean, there was a time where he wouldn't even make the countdown. Now he's number two. Tony Schumacher, the Sarge, who usually you see him in the top spot or running for the championship. He's got a few under his belt. He's third. Doug Kalita is in the fourth place. Leah Pritchett in fifth. She needs to get it together. She's not having as good a year as she did last year. She does have a couple wins, though. So she's in the hunt. Terry McMillan, another guy that found his way into the top 10, well, raced his way into the top 10 in Top Fuel with the Amelie Motor Oil Dragster. Seems like some of these guys have been working in the bottom tier and found their way into the top tier and putting a scare into the bigger teams like Schumacher Racing. And you figure Schumacher's got a lot of drivers in there. We've got Tony Schumacher and Antron Brown. Leah Pritchett drives for him in the Top Fuel division. So he's got these people coming up like Terry McMillan and Clay Milliken, who've been driving for a while, because I remember seeing them when I started covering that, and they've turned it around, and now they're showing the bigger teams of that they're hungry. Antron Brown being in seventh, I mean, you know, usually up near the top, he's won a couple of championships as well. The defending champ, Brittany Force, she's in eighth. And Mike Salinas, who had another guy in ninth spot who went all the way to the finals last time out. They didn't run this past weekend, they were off. But the Palmer, another guy, and you get big names like Richie Crampton, who used to drive for Alan Abbey. He's in 11th, so. And Blake Alexander got his first win from around this way. He's in 12th. He hasn't run many races, but he's starting to put a mark out. When you start to get some wins under your belt, it seems to motivate you even more. And once you figure out how to do it, then you got to keep doing it. And then you got to see what everybody does to compete against you. But that's just how it is. But once you get in there, you have an idea of what it takes. So, but breaking the barrier is kind of hard. Off to the funny car, like I was saying before, Courtney Force with a 250-point lead over Fast Jack Beckman. Matt Hagen, who won last time out, is third. He's 250 back as well. So you have a tie for second. And then in fourth, defending champ Robert Height is 267 back. J.R. Todd is fifth. Ronnie Capps, he's sixth, but he's 283 back. I mean, you know, that's close enough. All these people in the top 10 have a shot, or, you know, they'll get reseeded. And between first and second seed, and then the countdown is 30 points, and then it's 10 points behind after that. So even though you're showing a lot of points behind now, when that cutoff comes, it bunches the field up that much more, and then you got six races to get it done. Tommy Johnson Jr., the seventh. John Force, he may be an eighth, but he's not out of it. He's got two teammates to compete against, as well as everybody else. Sean Langdon, his first year in Funny Car, running ninth. And rounding out the top ten, Bob Tasca, who finally got in there. The only competitive Ford in the market. Tim Wilkerson drives a Ford, but at least Tasker's got factory support from Ford. He's been carrying that quick lane motorcraft badging ever since he's run. Remember having him on the show a few times back in the day. Maybe we can get Bob back on, see what it's like to get back in there. I know his people. And then you got some big names below that and fighting for the way in. Of course, the cutoff is only 14 points between 11th and 10th. So Cruz Pedregon, who's in 11th, is going to have to go some rounds and we'll get back in there. You got Del Warsham, who, believe it or not, was running DHL with Kalita, decided to go on his own. He was on the show last season. And then you got Gary Densham and Bob Bodie, guys that have been around. And funding means it's equipment. So, but right now, Courtney is trying to become the first woman to win a Funny Car Championship. And being her sister won Top Fuel last year, kind of, I'm sure they're competitive against each other. If brothers are, I'm sure sisters are just as much. So you figure everybody on John Force Racing has a championship now except for Courtney, who actually started drag racing a year before Brittany. Courtney's the younger sister. So, she's got to get her big Wally as opposed to the little ones that you get on a weekly basis as it is. So, and Ashley Force, who actually fell a little short in 2009 to teammate Robert Height. But I don't see Ashley getting back in the car anytime soon. She's doing behind the scenes work. So that being said, Courtney is shooting for to break the glass ceiling in funny car. It's been done in Top Fuel. It's been done in Pro Stock. It's been done in Pro Stock Motorcycle. Top Fuel is Shirley Muldowney. Brittany Force is probably the second woman to win a championship. So that's not in Top Fuel. So that's not that easy. So Courtney wants to put her name there. And she's the only one running. The only woman running in Funny Car now that Alexis DeJoria retired. So she's the sole standard bearer. I wonder if anybody's going to want to move and go down the Funny Car. I know in Pro Stock, come the standings there, it's Tanner Gray, the young punk, or the young buck, I should say, the 26-point lead over Greg Anderson, who's usually up near the top. Our pal Eric Enders, she's in the third spot. She's 52 back. So she's knocking at the door. She's got to get some round, some event wins in there and boost that points total. She can take the points lead in a weekend to above her go down in the first round. And she goes and wins the event. So she's looking to Epping to pad that, to build on that, climb that ladder a little higher. Teammate Vincent Nobile is fourth. He's 70 back. And then after fifth, you're 131 back. But Drew Skillman, Jake Coughlin Jr., sixth. Another Elite Motorsports teammate, Bo Butner, seventh, defending champ. He's 165 back. Chris McGahey, he's 191 back. Derek Kramer is ninth. He's 225 back. And then Jason Line, who's usually up near the top. It was him and Greg Anderson, the Summit Racing Equipment teammates there. He's 254 back. Like I said, it sounds like a lot, but it's not. Because you figure they're halfway through the season. And that's all 24 events. So you figure take six off of that, you're down to 18, and then the countdown starts. Pro Stock Motorcycle, they don't run all the time, but at the top of the pack, Andrew Hines, Eddie Krawick. Krawick won the championship last year, and he's second right now, 50 back of his teammate, Andrew Hines. But it doesn't matter. Ellie Tonglet in third, he's 125 back. Cherry Savoie, he's fourth, he's 176. Hector Arana Jr. is fifth. Scotty Polachek, seventh. The Smith family, Matt and Angie, seventh and eighth. Angel Sampay, ninth. And then Hector Sr., Arana Sr. is in the tenth spot. We have Angel Sampay, who has the most wins for a female in NHRA drag racing, all on the Pro Stock bike. She has two championships as well. She's looking to get that one back. It's hard to step out for a while and then come back in, but she's in the top 10. Oh, you got a lot of big names there. Anybody that I see, Karen Stouffer, you got another lady in the field, Melissa Serber. They don't run that many events, so they don't finish too well. You got to make the field as well. You got to be in the top 16 to actually make it to the final. So it's just one of those, you know, got to be in it to win it. So, but your top 10 are pretty much set in stone. Corey Reed in 11th, he's 19 out of 10th. I don't know if you can grab that spot from Hector Sr. You figure 10th and 9th are closer, 2 points apart. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. So it's all back in action this week. Things kick off on the 6th, which will be Thursday for qualifying. You can get tickets at NHRA.com. Just click on the schedule, click on tickets. The bikes are off this weekend. They'll be back at the Mile High Nationals and at Bandimere Speedway in Morrison, Colorado. I guess it's a suburb of Denver. So they go from Denver, from New England to Denver to Sonoma, do a Western Swing, Pacific, in Seattle, Northwest Nationals, and a little back east in August, Brainerd and Lucas Oil Raceway at Indianapolis at the end of August on Labor Day weekend. That'll be the cutoff before the countdown. Then they kick off the countdown in my old neck of the woods, sort of my old neck of the woods, Maple Grove Raceway, just outside of Reading. The Dodge Nationals, September for AAA Nationals at Gateway. Then down to Texas, pretty Fall Nationals and Carolina Nationals at ZMAX. Then back out west for the round out the season at the Strip in Las Vegas and the Auto Club in Pomona on my birthday weekend. And that's where they finished the season, at the Auto Club Speedway. November 8th through the 11th, Sunday being the 11th. So, that season's starting to wrap up. Of course, NASCAR is kicking off their second half as they head into Daytona. But this past week, all three series were at Chicagoland for the Overton's 200, 300, and 400. And it was a cooker out there. They were had in-car thermometers, and I saw that they were around the 150-degree mark inside the car. And the track temp was high, in the high 90s, low 100s, out in the sun. So I guess the ones who might have had it in the coolest part of the day would have been the truck series on Friday night. So, it was pretty interesting there to down to how that all came about. So let's check out how that turned out. Brett Moffitt was your winner. He led five times for 17 laps, taking the checkered over Ben Rhodes, Johnny Sauter. Came home third, Noah Gragson. Fourth, Brandon Jones. Fifth, Justin Haley. Sixth, John Hunter Nemechek was seventh, back in the trucks. Grant Enfinger was eighth. Austin Hill, ninth. Matt Snyder, tenth. The race was six cautions for 29 laps. It was Moffitt's fourth victory in the series. 17 lead changes amongst six drivers. Your big lap leader of the day was John Hunter Nemechek, who won stage one, led five times for 64 laps. Noah Gragson was next, led five times for 42 laps and won stage two, but he gets playoff point. John Hunter Nemechek doesn't, because he's not running for points in that series this year, but got some track time in and wound up actually running pretty good there for Joe Nemechek's team, his dad's team. So, but Moffitt was the guy, and the only other big leader of the day was Dalton Sargeant, who qualified second, wound up 20th. He led once for 24 laps, so didn't win any stages, and then wound up three laps down. Had only nine trucks on the lead lap at finish. So if you were 10th, you were a lap down. For your cautions, four of those were on-track incidents. The other two were stage breaks. See, I'm going to get a hold of somebody in NASCAR, see if we can rename the stage breaks instead of calling them cautions. Maybe when they throw that green-white checker flag out, leave it there and then come back with a full green when they come back from the stage tender, instead of calling it a caution, even though it's caution-like situation with you're not going full speed. But that's everything. If you don't like the stage racing, of course, that's a thing that's going to throw you off, especially when you see yellow out and you wonder what it is. Some people don't sit in front of the TV and say, oh, is that a stage thing or is that a wreck? And then you gotta look at the little leaderboard scroll and see what they got going on there. But anyway, Brett Moffitt taking the checkered flag. Here's your race-winning team of Shigeki Hattori, who owns the team, Scott Zipadelli, and Brett Moffitt.
We're joined now by the number 16 FreightAuctions.com Toyota team that just won its third race of the season. We have owner Shigi Hattori, driver Brett Moffitt, and crew chief Scott Zipadelli. We'll open it up for questions. Chris Knight.
Shigi, you're here.
Hi, Knight.
Is this better? Is this better than Atlanta?
Well, it feels a little different. Atlanta was our first win, but still feel really good. Always win.
Nothing's going to top Iowa. That was being Father's Day weekend, having my father there. But this is awesome, you know, from not knowing if we were even going to come here Tuesday to sitting in victory lane and being able to deliver Freight Auctions their first win and just I mean, the support we have and the determination we have, and Scott and all the guys, and everything TRD and Toyota and Mark Conquest and JGR Engines. You know, we're the lone wolf on the engine deal, and they really tried to screw with us on restarts tonight, and it got me a little hot. But it is what it is, and we're going to victory lane.
All right, Lee.
Sean Hunter really had command of that race, but you were catching him. What went through your mind when you saw the truck just absolutely slow down?
I had a really good run on him down the front stretch, and I don't know if he had started blowing up or not. But I kind of committed to a move of kind of like what Noah Gregson did to me at Iowa, where I was going to drive in on the bottom and hold it wide open and try to cut off his run. And then as soon as I dove in there, the spotter mentioned that I was cleared by two and then three, and then he's like, something's wrong, just back it down, take it easy, no one else is coming. So it worked out really well for us, and we've certainly lost a few races I think we should have won this year due to racing circumstances, and that's why he raced with checkered flag.
There you have Brett Moffitt and car owner Shigeki Hattori. So let's look at the points. Forgot to check the points out before we went to the audio.
But
here's how they stand. Okay. No points listed. Let me go to the Oh, I'm on the wrong page. Anyway, let's look at the points. Sauter leading the points. Has four race wins. Noah Gregson second in the points. But that's a technicality as far as seeding goes, because Brett Moffitt with his third win of the season will seed higher. And then after that will be Gregson with one win. And then below him will be Justin Haley with one win. So there will be your fourth and fifth, which will bump Stuart Friesen and everyone below him that have no wins. Friesen will bump down to sixth. Grant Enfinger will bump down to seventh. And then Matt Crafton will bump down to eighth in the final playoff spot. But it's not all out of the woods yet. As we go to Daytona, as a matter of fact, do the trucks run at Daytona? Let's see who's running. No, let's see. The only thing I saw was Xfinity and, of course, the Monster Energy Cup Series. So, trucks got the weekend off. So, it is just going to be the Coca-Cola Firecracker 250 and the Coke Zero 4 Sugar, Zero Sugar 400. All on Saturday at 7:30, and I take that back. It used to be Saturday and Sunday. It's going to be Friday night, July 6th at 7:30 on NBCSN, so you want to check out there. And the Sugar 400 will run on Saturday, July 7th at 7 p.m. on regular NBC, not the cable channel. So they'll have it on network TV, so you could watch from anywhere. This day and age, you want from your tablet or smartphone, but you won't just stare at a scrawny screen. Well, if you're out and about, or you can always DVR it and watch it when you get home. But Friday night and Saturday night events. I said, oh, they got Sauter, Moffitt, Gregson, and Haley, and then Friesen, Enfinger, Crafton, and Rhodes in your top eight. They actually have it the right way. They've on their leaderboard with the actual playoff standings as it is. But sometimes they don't update that front page, and it's like, why not? Anyway, on to the Xfinity Series. Trip to Chicagoland turned out to be a hot one for Kyle Larson, who took the checkered flag. He led three times for 80 laps in the Ineos Chevrolet. Kevin Harvick came home second. Cole Custer was third. First Xfinity regular. And then Daniel Suarez was fourth. Daniel Hemric was fifth. Elliott Sadler sixth. Justin Allgaier was seventh. Eighth was Paul Menard. Ninth, Chase Briscoe. And rounding out the top ten, Chase Elliott. So you have one, two, three, four, five of your top ten guys are Cup drivers. And then your other five are Xfinity Series regulars. So your stage winners were Kyle Larson, who won stage two, and Tyler Reddick, who won stage one. Tyler Reddick led twice for 35 laps, but wound up in a fender bender because he had a pit road violation and had a start and back. It was too fast entering, I believe, if I remember correctly, and wound up getting sent to the back and didn't make it because he got in the wreck trying to fight his way back. That's what happens when you don't. Kyle Larson's win was his 10th in the Xfinity Series. There were four cautions for 21 laps. Again, two of those were stage breaks, so it was fairly clean if you only get two cautions for on-track incidents. 13 lead changes amongst seven drivers. Cole Sutter was your winner. So, you like to start up front and finish up front, but it doesn't always happen to the race. As we look at the points, I want to go back to the other page because now they have the winners lined up on the home page. So you got Justin Allgaier leading the playoff standings with two wins. Christopher Bell second. Tyler Reddick, who wound up involved in a wreck, he's third with one win. And then your non-winners, according to points, will be Cole Custer, Daniel Hemric, Elliott Sadler, Brandon Jones, Ryan Truex, Matt Tift, Austin Cindric, Ryan Reed, and Ross Chastain are your top 12. 12 people making the cut. As a matter of fact, let's see who's hanging around the 13th spot. It's Ryan Sieg. Spencer Gallagher is not listed. He's suspended, even though he does have his only win of his Xfinity career. Drug violation. How do you, I don't know, you ruin you go your whole life trying to make the big time. You make it from the Truck Series to the Xfinity Series, you get a win, and voila. So, Ryan Sieg is 33 points behind Ross Chastain. So, he's got a shot, but not what you would call a good shot, Ross Chastain, and probably with a better team. Let's see, who's he with? Ross Chastain. He's been on the show before, actually, when he drove for Brad Keselowski Racing in the Truck Series. He drove the 19. He actually was in the 4 team, so he is that 7 spots again ahead of 13th place Ryan Sieg. So if he keeps doing that, Sieg won't catch him. Sieg would have to probably get a win to make the playoffs, but it doesn't look like that's happening. Anyway, let's go to our race-winning team and see what they had to say after the race.
We're joined now by the driver of the number 42 Ineos Chevrolet, today's race winner, Kyle Larson. and his crew chief, Mike Shiplett. We'll open it up for questions.
No questions. You got an easy day there, Kyle.
Kyle, Jay Cohen, Associated Press. What did you like so much about the high line on that track? You seemed to be able to find a lot of speed up there all day long.
I don't know. You can look at any track where you can run inches off the wall, and I'll be faster than anybody. So, you know, once the lap time's dropped off enough around the bottom, I can move up there and you know, go really fast. I'd say for the most part we were somewhat tight around the bottom, and then I'd move up to the top and I'd be a little freer and could roll the corner a little bit quicker, and then you just have the straightaways that really is where all your lap time comes from, you know, being committed to the throttle a lot sooner. So we were able to just, you know, the long runs paid off for us, and then I think we had a really good green flag stop and was able to gap them even more. And then you just try and cruise the wind, hoping no cautions came out, because restarts are always intense in the Xfinity Series. So, you know, thankfully it didn't happen, and we were able to get the win. So it was nice to finally, you know, I feel like, I don't know if there's other races that I've won that I've dominated like this, but it's, I know I've been leading a lot of races like this and cautions come out. So it was nice to finally, you know, get the win that we were deserved. And it was a lot of fun.
Eric, then Reed.
Eric Young with SuperSpeedway.com. Kyle, you were able to make it to up to sixth in the first stage from the back of the field. What was it like coming through the field? And was the long run ability of your car pretty much what helped you win that race?
Well, we had a right front tire going down at the end of qualifying, and we had to put Goodyear gave us just one, you know, fresh tire to put on the right front. So it was actually really loose. You know, that first run there, I think because the right front tire was just working better than the other ones. So I took my time getting to the front. You know, I felt like, or I thought I would get there a little quicker than I did. But I had to be careful. You know, I was really loose. And even when I ran the top, it was just really sketchy. So tried to take care of the right side. I got the wall just barely a couple times throughout the race. Ship was got a lot of anxiety. I think whenever I run an Xfinity car at a track like this, we run next to the wall. He gave me a good little lecture before the race, but we were able to keep the right side somewhat clean.
There you have Kyle Larson winning the Xfinity Series race. Little format change there. Instead of having the driver talk about it this weekend a little bit, they just threw it out to questions right away. I don't know if it's a new thing for NASCAR or what, because they run the press conferences, so that's how it goes. Anyway, on to the main event of the weekend. The Overton's 400 came down to a battle of the Kyles again. Harvick was up there for a while. I had picked Harvick to win the event. Eric Almirola actually led the most laps from a sixth to the qualifying position. Wound up a lap down, finishing 25th, but he was up there running pretty good. Didn't get any stage wins, the first stage win. Actually, he won the first stage. Second stage win went to third place finisher, Kevin Harvick. It was a battle for that with teammate Kurt Busch. But when all was said and done, Kyle Busch, in the last lap, NASCAR, old classic NASCAR, not newer NASCAR, last lap with trading paint and scuffing the wall and saving it. It was came down to Kyle Larson and Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch had the lead. Larson came in and rubbed Kyle up a little bit into the wall. Kyle came back down, rubbed Larson up, retaking the lead, and made it to the finish line first. Kyle leading one time for 59 laps. Yes, that was the last 59. Even though Kyle Larson took the lead on the last lap, he did not keep it before they crossed the start-finish line to take the checkered flag, so he was not credited with leading that lap. He only led seven laps the whole day, Larson did, but you know, after winning in dominating fashion, he was making a run of it, so he was able to get to Kyle Busch, and it was a good finish at the end. One of the best finishes I've seen in a while. Harvick was third. Truex was fourth. Clint Bowyer was fifth. Eric Jones was sixth. Seventh, Denny Hamlin. Eighth, Joey Logano. Ninth, Brad Keselowski. Rounding out the top 10 was the 88 of Noah Tafael Jr. He was in the booth for the first time. Well, sort of the booth, one of the sub-booths. The main booth was Steve Letarte and Jeff Burton were your analysts there, and Jr. was in the secondary booth. But anyway, Alex Bowman in the car full-time this year. Rounds out the top 10. Clint Bowyer. A lot of Fords in the top 10 with Harvick, Bowyer, Logano, and Bowman. Kurt Busch led twice for 20 laps. Just fell a little short on stage two, finishing second. Ryan Blaney, who started up front, he led 19 laps as well. So good run for Ford this weekend. It was Kyle Busch's fifth win of the series, his 48th overall in his career. So he's climbing that. Two more, he gets the 50 mark. That puts him in elite company. Five caution flags for 23 laps. Two of those stage conclusions, which is one of those the four laps there. So you figure eight of those 23 were conclusion caution laps. 24 lead changes amongst 10 drivers. The margin of victory was pretty close. A little wider than it could have been, than it should have been, I guess. But Kyle Larson hitting the wall, spinning and saving it, made it a 1.87 second margin of victory for Kyle Busch. As we go to the winning driver, Kyle Busch, here's what he had to say.
We're joined now by our race winner today, the driver of the number 18 Skittles red, white, and blue Toyota, Kyle Busch. We're going to kick it off to questions, starting with Bob Pockris.
Bob Pockris, ESPN. When Kyle Larson's behind you and gaining on you like that, did you expect a harder hit, or do you think back and like, gosh, if he wanted to dump me, he could have dumped me at California several years ago, and he's just not the guy who's going to just...
I don't know. You know, when I thought he was going to pull a slide job, and when he didn't try to do a slider, then I wasn't sure what his next move was going to be. I was like, surely he's not going to drive inside of me. And then he did. And so after that point, I was kind of like, okay, well, all games are off right now. All bets are off, and it's wide open here from here on out to back to the checkered flag. So, you know, he got a run on me off turn two after I got in the fence and just stalled, killed my momentum, and then his side draft was able to propel him by me. I tried to retaliate with a side draft, but I wasn't really close enough and wasn't really getting anywhere with it. So he got by me, and getting into turn three, it was just about following him in there and seeing if I couldn't cut left under him, if he would slide up. He didn't slide up, so I drove off in there as far as I could, and I got into the back of him. And once I did that and he was kind of sliding loose, I just was trying to get back to the start-finish line after that. So it was just, you know, a product of kind of once it's done to you, then it's fair game and it's on, I guess. So, you know, that's kind of what transpired.
They have Kyle Busch talking about the finish, taking his fifth win overall. In the point standings, Kyle Busch with his fifth takes the lead over Kevin Harvick, who has five in the seeding, because Kyle Busch has more points. Points dictate your standings in the seeding. 16 make the playoffs. So Kyle has the lead over Harvick. Truex, three wins, was looking good towards the fourth till he faded at the end there. Clint Bowyer has two, so he's now fourth. Joey Logano with a win, a legitimate one. He had one last time out but didn't make it because he got penalized for failing inspection for some sort of violations, and they basically gave him the win as far as the trophy and the money goes, but no playoff seeding. And he didn't make it in points, so I sat one out. Bragg says Austin Dillon is the last one with a win, winning the Daytona 500. So he is sixth. Brad Keselowski is seventh. He leads the nearest points all the way down. He leads Kurt Busch in eighth, Denny Hamlin in ninth, Kyle Larson in tenth, Ryan Blaney in 11th, 12th, Eric Amarola, Jimmy Johnson in 13th. And Jimmy usually has a win this year, at least either Charlotte or Dover, and has neither. Chase Elliott is 14th, Eric Jones 15th, and the last playoff contender, Alex Bowman. And let's see. And Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is 23 points behind Bowman. So this should be interesting. Let's go back to this coming weekend now as we go to Daytona for the Coke Zero 400. This race last year was won by Ricky Stenhouse. And then he won Talladega after that. So he had his little double win restrictor plate. He actually only led 17 laps the whole event. Your big lap leader was involved in an accident. Was Brad Keselowski. Wound up 31st. So Ford seemed to run well there. Of course, Clint Bowyer, can't count him out there. He wound up second. Like I said, in a restrictor plate race, it can go either way. So who am I thinking is going to win this one? I picked Harvick last week, but you know what? Your pole sitter, oh, duh. Pole sitter was Dale Jr. last year. He's not in the car, Bowman is. But Bowman's good. Got to give it to him. And he's going to fare pretty decent, I guess. Chase Elliott was your number two qualifier, but he wound up 22nd. So I'm kind of curious to who is going to get in the top spot. I think it's either going to be a Ford or a Chevy. So if I had to give it to a Chevy, I mean, the only Toyota I see up there, Paul Menard finished third. He was in a Chevy. He's in a Ford this year. He's in the Wood Brothers Ford. You never know. There's names up at the top that usually don't wind up at the top. Michael McDowell, David Reagan, A.J. Allmendinger. He's eighth. Brendan Gaughan, who's not running this year, was seventh. So, I don't know. Let me see. Where did Joey Logano wind up last year? He started seventh, wound up 35th, got in a wreck. Only finished 71 laps out of the 163. So I don't know. It's going to be tough. Anyway, I'm going to wing it and say Joey Logano this week. Special thanks to my guest, Jeremy Mayfield. It's good hearing from him, seeing him back on the track. So I want to say everybody have a good, safe 4th of July. I'll be in the annual Skeeters Hot Dog Eating Contest in downtown Whistle on the festivities tomorrow. So if you want to check Facebook stuff out, you can. We'll see you all next week on July the 10th. 12 noon, my guest will be actor Jeff Sandor, who played Dale Earnhardt in the History of NASCAR on Country Music TV, or I think that was the channel. But anyway, he is the new host of Davidson's Gallery of Guns, taking over for Anne Marie Rhodes, who got married and is having a baby. So he's filling in for her. We'll talk some shooting next week. I'm Vince Bonfigli, your host. wishing you all a good day and good racing. Don't forget, if you missed it live, you can check it out. It'll be up on podcast within a half an hour on blogtalkradio.com/garagetalklive. We'll see you all next week. Bye now.